PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome everyone to episode 29 of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Off Course THP. You can also follow me at Canadan Golf if you absolutely want to. I don't know why you would, but I'm here to entertain you as much as I can. We are a part of the THP Radio Network along with our good friend, Golf Unfiltered. You can find him on Twitter at Golf Unfiltered. And he's also available in pretty much the same place as we are in terms of listening to our podcast. With me today is what do we call you? The head honcho, El Jefe, Senior JV.
Overrated.
Okay. With me today is my good friend, Josh Babbitt. Owner, not owner of the Hackers Paradise. Is that you or Morgan?
It is Morgan.
Yeah. So you run it. She owns it.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense. You can follow Josh at JB_THP Golf on Twitter. He's always got something to say. And then of course at THP Golf. Josh, a very big welcome to episode 29. Thanks for coming on today.
It's a real significant number being number 29 too. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, you asked me who I wanted on this week, and probably trying to vie in for that episode 30 milestone episode, and I determined that I could probably do better. So here we are with you at 29.
And you can.
How are you doing? Everything good?
I'm doing well. Crazy time in the golf industry with new releases, content coming out. It's pretty nuts throughout, so it's keeping us busy.
You know, I like when we do video chats, and that's something that while this is an audio-based podcast for now, we do actually have video feeds, and I get to see the background of the tech studio, which currently is a bit of a gong show. This is, I believe, an event coming up with UST?
Yeah, Ben Hogan and UST together. It's the Ben Hogan Experience with UST Mamiya, and that is next week. And for those who listen to this on Friday or Monday, you know, or the weekend, you still have a chance to enter a contest to win a trip to Vegas, to be fit by Danny Lee, get new equipment, all expenses paid. And it is going on. And, you know, it's all you got to do is pick the right winner. It's Ben Hogan versus UST in a lot of ways.
It's pretty insane. Are you openly admitting to who you are leaning towards at this point? Are you that kind of guy?
Sure. I'm not rooting for anybody. When you look at the teams, they're pretty different. The best golfer in the entire THP Experience at this one would be Tyler from Ben Hogan. He plays to scratch or plus handicap. He's one of those few guys who tees it up once a year and shoots under par. And then, and little known fact, he beat Gary Woodland as an amateur. It's not that little known when he tells everybody about it.
Little known unless you've met him, right?
Yeah. And his team is filled with, I think he's got one low cap and a couple of higher handicaps, which work well in these events. And then the other team has Danny Lee, who I think is a 3 last time I checked. And also not playing a ton of golf right now, if you ask him. And his team has some low handicaps on there and a couple of mids. So it'll be a very interesting matchup. If I was guessing right now, I would say Team Tyler was going to win. Only because Tyler's a gamer and he really cares about winning a lot more than Danny does.
I think Danny probably enjoys being the underdog anyway. So you're putting him in a good place for opportunities to win at this point.
Yeah. And, you know, every person who's in the event, there's 6 THPers that want a chance to go. They're getting a new set of irons, a new set of wedges, all with custom shafts. And nobody has seen these shafts. They're actually behind me. I should show you because nobody will be able to see them. Let me grab them.
All right. But while he does that, there's one thing that I really want to do, and I definitely didn't prime him for this. Something that just started for 2021 on THP is the Albatross Club, the refresh for that membership. It is an incredible experience to have access to some of these unbelievable. Is he showing me the shaft? I can't even talk because they're so sweet. Wait till you guys see these things. So anyways, Albatross 2021, the club, it's $35. It allows you access to these incredible events that take you to places you wouldn't normally go, get you clubs, and as he's already shown me, items that are incredibly unique. And my favorite part about it, Josh, as much as all that other stuff is cool, is your tie-in with with charity. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that means to you to incorporate them?
Sure. And I don't want to bore anybody who's listening to this and already tuned out for this segment, but my wife and I got a chance to go to St. Jude a few years back. We don't have children, but we got a chance to visit what I'll call a campus, and it was pretty moving. And if you can walk away from that place after a tour and not shed a tear, I'm not sure you have emotions. And, you know, every website out there has some sort of donation drive or, you know, help us pay the bills. And listen, it's web hosting and things like that can add up. I get it. But we wanted to bring a charity in, and we donate money every year. We have a little plaque in her office that we get every year that's a VIP donor. I'm going to save a surprise for next year. I know you've already seen the image, but the donations from 2020 allowed us, we had such a great turnout. They allowed us to do something pretty cool with St. Jude, and we'll share that when they're actually done in May. But it's pretty surreal, and being able to help is something really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad I teed that up for you instead of just making these big claims, because I did see something I'm so excited about. I think everyone's going to love it. And I just wanted to bring that to the forefront and thank you guys for choosing such a wonderful location to give back, I guess, is what I really want to say. Let's change directions a little bit. And I'm still rattled from those UST Mamiya shafts. Those are absolutely ridiculous.
10 sets in the world have been made. 6 of them will go to those guys. I have 2 that will go in my irons. That's how much I like them. And then we're going to give a set away on the forum after this event.
Yeah, I kept meaning to tell him to make 11, and I never got around to it. So that's fine. I guess I'll settle for my incredibly custom recoil shafts that are actually going back in irons right now. So that's pretty fun.
Nice.
So I think it actually blends well with the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. You have direct access to a lot of information about how golf is doing, how it's trending upwards, downwards. My experience is a little bit more localized, especially at my current club. I do get to see month over month and year over year comparisons for rounds played. And we saw a massive uptick this year, certainly more than we would ever have anticipated. And it was continuous from about April till September. Not just from a rounds played perspective, because that's gone way up, but from an equipment standpoint, you've released some stuff recently that makes golf look to be in an incredible position moving forward.
Yeah, it's, you know, what a weird year. We went from some of our OEM partners that we talked to making literally $0 to companies having the best years they've ever had. And that's with months missing. We're not talking month over month. We're talking year over year. But when you expand that out to golf course play being up exponentially and retail stores doing what they're doing, the latest Golf Data Tech report, which is not, I don't want to say it's the authority, or I don't want to say it's the absolute on the subject, but it is the authority on the subject, talking about hitting numbers that we've never hit before. And golf equipment sales, it's telling us that there's a lot more people playing and interested. And it's not just the old people that are playing. I don't, old people is the wrong term because I don't mean age. The same people playing year after year, buying the same equipment year after year. And then you go into your club and you look in somebody's bag and they have all older equipment. And I don't mean older like, you know, decades ago. I mean older, a season or two out. And you're wondering who's really buying it all. Right now, everybody is. I mean, companies cannot keep things in stock, and that's exciting time for golf. And I posted something on social media the other day that this is, we're going to go on 13 years of doing this coming up. And I still get just as excited now when a box of golf equipment comes than I did back in 2008 when we started. And I see that excited. If somebody can't be excited about golf equipment, they don't love the game the same way I do. And I talk to people in the industry and they feel the same way. You know, the new stuff comes out, they get excited. It's fun to watch. And so, you know, the excitement of the equipment is going along with the excitement of rounds going up. And it's just so much fun to sit back and watch from the outside.
I love the idea that golf has become such an accessible sport from a playability standpoint, from a we're in a tough position, and not that OffCourse ever really talks about the pandemic and tries to keep it as separate as possible so people can enjoy a half hour instead of worrying about something else. You know, it's one of those sports where it is something you can go play golf and not be as fearful as some of the other things that we would normally spend our money on. So I think this is a great opportunity for the game to continue to grow and see new people. One thing I think is really, really interesting is the decision for Callaway and Topgolf to merge. I think
quite the segue you just made.
I mean, I wanted to talk a little bit more about how golf is trending, but I feel like this is a huge component of the success for Callaway moving forward, because Topgolf is a place where golfers who aren't golfers, people go and play the game, whether intentional or not. A lot of them go to eat the food. A lot of them go to see other people hit. But this is this great tie-in, this accessibility to the game that we haven't had anywhere close to that level. And now we have a company understanding that, recognizing that this is an easy entry point to have your name, your clubs, your brand plastered all over a location where new golfers are coming regularly to enjoy the game. Do you feel like there? How much? Because I know they had a tie-in already, and I it didn't seem like anyone was poised to make changes of this nature in, let's say, March or April. What perspective do you align with my perspective here? And
how
beneficial this is for Callaway?
Completely. And take a step back. Topgolf has done something that nobody else in golf has ever been able to do. They've convinced non-golfers that they're not playing golf and convinced golfers they are.
Yep.
And that's miraculous in its own right, but it's also really cool. Now, Callaway's been aligned with Topgolf for a number of years. I think the share percentage they owned was 14% before yesterday. I think that opens the door to a lot of things that Callaway as an equipment company and golf company can do, such as fittings, and they're moving heavily into that. And other things, but it's also just, I mean, if you take a step back, forget what we do for a living and forget the angry golf Twitter that's out there. It's a company that seems to be embracing fun, and Topgolf is all about fun.
Yeah. And I love how accessible and visible it is to the public, and not even just the golfers. You see people on social media actively posting, whether they're golfers or not, videos from Topgolf.
Topgolf fail videos are something you can, if you're having a bad day, you can head down that path and laugh forever.
Yeah. But then you look at it, you can take Topgolf any direction you want. I've gone on there on a double date with the wife and another couple friend we have who aren't golfers, which was a great time. It was a different perspective than me going with my four regular golfing buddies during the winter. Knowing that we can't go out and play at our local course, that the concept of the game changes. And you've proven that at THP, taking THPers out with, you had Jamie Sadlowski at one.
That was mind bending watching him hit pitching wedges. He hit hybrid pitching wedges. So let's start with that. And he was hitting them over the back net routinely. What we learned after the fact is it's actually at this particular Topgolf, a police station back there.
Yeah. So I think it really represents the potential diversity of the experience that comes into what Topgolf is. But I'm going to circle back and ask you, do you think this positions Callaway better than most other brands because of that open accessibility to new golfers?
I don't know. If I did, I'd probably be a fortune teller and be wealthier than I am now. I think it positions them differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think in a perfect world, all these companies would want to tap into new golfers in a similar way. And Callaway's brands align well with the non-golfer. Travis Matthew, for instance, is an apparel brand they own that is a golf brand, but ventures way outside of that with tie-ins with Oscar De La Hoya and others. So it's more of a lifestyle brand. And I consider Topgolf, it's got golf in the name, but it really is a lifestyle activity and something for fun. So yeah, I would say positioning it to non-golfers probably better than most. Will it pay off? Anybody's guess. I hope so for them. I think it's a really unique take, and I think they have big plans overall. It's also a huge revenue thing right now.
Yeah. I
mean, Topgolf being open space, meaning not open for business, open space, and allowing in certain areas people to go and have fun and embrace it without actually going and playing 18 holes. Isn't Topgolf what rewind back a decade, what Hack Golf was trying to do, where, you know, this brand came out with, we're going to change the game of golf by having 15 inch cups. And yeah, it sped up play and this and that, but no real golfer wanted to do that. Right or wrong, they didn't want any part of that.
You had to put in the 15 inch cups, didn't you?
Yeah. So Topgolf has managed to bridge that gap and get people more interested. And that's, at the end of the day, I've always been when you do something, leave it better than the person behind you did. And that's one of those things. And it's such a weird analogy and parallel to go to, that Topgolf is going to leave golf in a better place than it was before.
Yeah. And to your point, they offer that experience to both brand new and experienced golfers. I mean, it's clear they, especially here locally, I got a good friend who runs their, not just their fitting, their teaching department, and showcasing that instruction there can be just as viable and just as good as anywhere else. I think that's that perfect tie into letting people understand that anyone who wants to be a part of it, or whether you just want to come and eat the, what I think is pretty darn good food.
They have injectable donuts, Dan. Yeah,
there's no way around it, right? The donuts are injectable, and you want that in your life. Yes.
The food actually is, for bar food, it's pretty darn good. You know, being at a driving range and having a server bring you drinks, and there's a little sofa area. It's a lot of fun. To me, it's not the same as going to play 18 holes. But if I'm going to Topgolf, I'm not looking to go play 18 holes. I'm looking to have fun with friends. And I think it does that as good as anything out there. Now, are you the guy who brings your own clubs to Topgolf?
Oh, 100%. I would not.
Full bag?
I would not and or could not go to Topgolf without my own bag. Would you not?
I've done it both ways.
So, okay, I have two thoughts here, because you're kind of like me. You're not a big fan of the things that other people touch.
Oh, right? No, I wipe everything down. I know where you're going with this. There's a Lysol wipe in the pocket if I'm doing this.
Yeah. First of all, the amount of people touching that stuff is concerning to me. So that's already like a no chance. Okay. So, and that's just me being me. I regret taking microbiology in college every day of my life, although it has opened my eyes to lengths that only in February or March of this year, people finally understood me. But I think the other part is, if I'm local, like if I'm traveling and we have no plans to go, I would go and have some fun, but it wouldn't be golf to me. It would trend more with this other perspective, as you said, convince people they're not playing golf. That would be what it would be for me. I'd be hitting like stinger fades and doing as much weird stuff as I can.
If you can hit a fade with one of those hybrids in the rack, you're impressive.
I think to me, the experience, especially locally, I would definitely commit my own clubs, and there is an expense there. So I think the understanding from my take is, if I'm going to spend that money, it'll be with my clubs.
Yeah. I see people with their clubs when I've been, and I haven't been to the one in Nashville yet, which is kind of funny, but when I've been to them, and I've been to them all over the country, I've never had a bad experience. And you see a really good mix of people using their own clubs and not using their own clubs. There's nothing to feel bad about bringing your bag.
Yeah, that's fair. And there's a lot of games to play, even if you're not, you know, super dialed in, which is pretty fun.
Yeah.
I like that. I like this decision from Cali. I was very pleased to see that. And I like where golf is right now. I think it's going to be a lot of fun seeing how golfers experience 2021. I feel like a lot of their purchases in 2020 were moved up or pushed back a bit. So they might have a lot of new product in their hands that would normally be 5 or 6 months old at this point. So seeing how this goes into 2021 is definitely curious to me, because, you know, we're saving money by not going anywhere, but we also have a brand new bag of clubs. What else are we going to buy? right?
Let me put some food to thought for there for those that are listening and really like to head down to the rabbit hole of golf equipment.
Yeah.
Market share is a really unique thing, and it's not 100% accurate. It doesn't measure certain things. It doesn't measure online and things like that. But I saw in one of the later reports that one of the companies went way down 1 month, you know, like half. So I called and I said, "But everybody's doing well. What happened?" The answer was honest. We didn't have any to sell.
Really?
We're sold out. So, and you see it the next month, because this is a couple months back, you see it the next month, and I'm doing a graph on the screen so Dan can see it, but nobody else can. You see it the next month, them jump right back to where they were. So I've asked a number of companies, with the cost of equipment what it is now, how do you manage inventory moving to 2021? Meaning, how do you know and forecast what's right? Because you don't want to end up in the situation you were in this year where you have nothing to sell. But you also don't want to go back when TaylorMade Golf kind of screwed over the golf industry and retail world as a whole by having too much left on shelves. And I don't want to put that all on TaylorMade, but that was the messaging that was put out by a lot of the media, was that there was just too much out there from years prior. So the forecasting and inventory control for 2021 is the most fascinating I think we'll ever see. And at least that I've seen in 12 years and probably going forward, because nobody really knows what's going to move. If it were me, I would definitely go with more than I purchased in 2020, but you still have to be a little conservative. You can always accelerate, or hopefully you can accelerate another release moving up. And for the people out there who say nothing changes year over year and just wait 2 years before you release something, what's a company to do if they run out in a year? Should they just make more of the same thing if something else new is ready? Of course not.
Yeah. So I think the other problem there is lead time, right? I heard 11 weeks for some. I've heard more for others. Not exactly the easiest thing to measure product on shelf versus the ability to get new product in. It's not like it's for folks out there who aren't familiar with it. It's not like it's next day or even next week that product could be available. This takes time, and it takes the ability to transition that product to where it needs to be sold from. So yeah, I think it's a tough thing, and I'm curious. I'm looking forward to it. And I think it's a good opportunity to maybe tease a little something we got coming up with all this new product
for 2021.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think? I've gotten previews on most of the new stuff coming out. Not everything, not every company, but most. And first of all, I'm going to say there's some companies doing crazy good stuff next year. Crazy good stuff. But I don't want to get ahead of myself because I don't know actual embargo or release dates or things like that. And a good example of this recently is somebody on social media put out a picture of the new Apex irons, which aren't anything like the new Apex irons. They're literally the X-Forge that already came out with an Apex stamp on them. That's not the new Apex irons. And now people are, oh, I've already seen them. Don't get ahead of yourself. Wait for final product. That's why an embargo date exists. But neither here nor there. I'm getting too excited over here. There's a lot of really, really good stuff coming out. And two brands in particular that I won't mention their names have incredible lines coming out that people are going to just die over. So with the PGA show being different and a lot of virtual stuff going on, and they've announced they're going to a virtual show, we're going to do something for our audience because we do a lot of live stuff from the PGA show and we do a lot of recorded video. We're going to do something from the tech studio and attempt something that really has never been done before. This was something that you kind of thought up as well. Why don't you kind of explain? I don't want to give away too much, but how different it's going to be.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing we have that's obviously going for us and has been presented already, we have access to the industry. We have access to an incredible location, Hitting Bay, that we're constantly improving both the internals and external experience for everyone. I think what better way to do that than to incorporate the two in a timeline that suits a lot of these releases and people are used to getting that kind of experience And I'll certainly miss running up and down the PGA show floor at a pace that is, for lack of a better word, for those who aren't familiar with you, confusing.
I move fast.
Yeah. Especially for some folks who've had a busy night before.
Yeah. Sorry, like unfiltered.
Chasing is the term.
Yeah, I'm just a big believer that people, the path of least resistance is not my forte. But I'm so excited about what we're going to be able to do. And it's going to kind of shine a light a little bit on what we're going to be able to do in 2021 for people as far as giving them industry access, equipment access in real time, showing the equipment, but not just in pictures. It's going to be something that I'm really, really looking forward to. No idea, honestly, how to pull it off. I just kind of said we're going to do it, and we hope for the best. But
to put a little perspective on this, JB and I have been brainstorming, for lack of a better word, for the last couple months. And the first discussion we had included, how are we going to utilize a camera for this video or this experience? The more recent discussions are, how many cameras are we going to utilize?
Can we do this with three or four? And the answer is yes.
I think in a month's time, it's going to be eight or nine, and I'm a little bit nervous.
But we're excited, and we think if I rewind back to when everybody was stuck and locked in their house and working from home, and some people still are, we had a schedule of like a live stream almost every day, connecting people with the industry, take their mind off this, let people talk. Think about that from a perspective of the connection, and then multiply that out by equipment, swings, data, everything you could imagine. We're going to kind of throw at you and hope it works.
So basically, I envision me talking to people and you hitting clubs all day long.
I would like to hit clubs all day long. I have a Theragun right there that will make that possible.
I am so excited to see this unfold. And I'd love to tell you more, everyone out there listening, the folks who follow us on our THP TV, especially our YouTube, but I don't think we really know. So
we don't know who's involved yet.
Yeah.
We don't have exact dates, but those are going to be coming in the next week or so. You'll probably be able to share them on the next show when you have a better guest than me. And we will have a full unveiling of what we're going to do. We're not trying to step on toes of the PGA show. That's still, we're big fans of that show. Most people aren't. We do actually like it. I enjoy going every year, but we want to do something a little different for our audience and bring a different type of connection.
I wonder, can we do this on like a Friday where I can do the podcast down there?
I don't see why not. I think it's going to be more than just one day.
Interesting. Well, wait, did I just invite myself? I feel like I should be a part of this.
I think you did invite yourself.
I think I did. Considering it's the meat of the ideas coming from my weird brain and your weird brain. So let's go a little bit off track on that. But there's still one thing I want to talk about. Do you want to talk food or do you want to talk golf a little more first?
I like both topics a lot.
Lean on one. Please tell me.
Let's talk food. We'll jump right into food. We can come back to golf.
Recently, the Masters is obviously coming, and they've done some pretty fun stuff on social where they're allowing us to watch paint dry. And for some reason, we all enjoy that as they paint the sidewalks. as you shake your head, there's one thing that I love talking about every year, and just because you get to get a sense of where everyone comes from and what their perspective is, and that's the Masters dinner. And not so much what will be had, but what you would offer. And we do have a thread going on THP. I found out that bulgogi is an option, which
I'm a big enjoyed. Fan.
But then you get your standard steak, you get your pizza.
I know that's such a weak answer too.
Steak and potatoes. Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, man? It's gotta be some sort of barbecue, right?
I don't know. There's a running joke in our household where, when we don't know what to dinner, I always say lots of, and it doesn't mean lots of food. Like I do want a mass plate of food, but I don't want a lot. When you walk into a food court and you see all those choices, but the food all sucks. I mean, there's some guilty pleasures there, but for the most part, the food all sucks. It's all tastes exactly the same. I want that, but in a gourmet fashion. So I want to have, you and I had bulgogi fries in Orange County. I want to have pizza. I want to have barbecue. I want to have chicken tenders. I want to have a, and then I want to up it. I want to have like veal Oscar. I want like just the most, it'll be the most off the wall foodie menu ever. And it'll be tasting plates of everything. The poor chef's probably going to come out with a shotgun and shoot me. good news is I'm never winning the Masters, but that's what it would be.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super weird. And by the way, I've put way too much thought into this.
Bread pudding for dessert?
Bread pudding, but it's got to be a certain bread pudding. I want it made out of either cinnamon rolls or donuts. And then I want frosting over the top.
Okay, where is the best bread pudding you've had? And is it Michelin?
No. The best is... tough. There's two. The first one is at a small place in Cape Cod that actually does Southern food, which is super weird. And the second would be at the Gaylord Palms in Orlando at their Greek Mediterranean restaurant. They had it for dessert. And it was out of this world. Michelin's good for buffet style, though. And they give you a pitcher of frosting to pour over the top of it. There's a place outside of Savannah that does a really good one, too. And the fact that I know this is super disturbing.
Well, I'm aware of your foodiness. I thought of all the people I would want to talk Masters dinner with, it would definitely be you. Although I am genuinely offended that you haven't offered up poutine as a menu item at your Masters.
I'm not saying that wouldn't be there.
It's one of many fry options.
Exactly. It's a strong possibility. I mean, the fry station, and I don't mean French fries, at this dinner is going to be busy.
The fry station.
And couldn't you make the case that the bulgogi fries in some weird way are a form of poutine?
It's an unfortunate form of poutine if it is. Now, if you took a standard poutine and threw bulgogi on top, I'd probably eat it and be okay with
probably.
It. Probably. Here's an idea. How about a gravy fountain?
I'm perfectly okay with that.
Who needs chocolate fountains when you can have a gravy
fountain? I would add things to a gravy fountain.
Could you also imagine?
Sounds like the grossest thing, because all I hear in my head is that YouTube video that went viral with the larger man screaming bowl of gravy over and over and over again.
Could you imagine having, you know, 30, 40, 50 of your closest buddies out for that kind of Masters dinner and then making them go play golf the next day?
Next day? No, they have to do it that night.
That night, yeah, okay.
Because I would want the par three. If I were king, which is also very disturbing, I would want the par three contest under lights.
I can't believe you're willing to talk par three contest.
I actually did just segue that, not even thinking about it.
This makes me so unhappy that we've waited all this time for a Masters and we don't even get a par three.
Yeah. I'll take a different perspective in that the Masters has never gone up against the NFL and college football, and tying them in, not the worst idea in the world, especially in the deep south of Georgia, where Georgia and neighboring states, college football is a religion.
True.
But I personally, I'm not a big college football guy, so I personally would have rather had the par three. I think there was still room to do both, honestly. Think of College Game Day at the par three.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't. I think it's a little short-sighted on who the audience is. You know, as you mentioned, you're a huge sports guy, but college sports don't really do anything for you.
Nothing.
From a basketball perspective. I watch it because I'm curious, and certainly it's fun to watch highly skilled players or football players, you know, play the game before the NFL, but to lose out on something that's been tradition for so long. And I, not just, I worry about this from a traditional standpoint, I get the argument about not having fans, but at the same time, this is the experience for these guys. These guys have lived their whole life and this could be the first Masters experience for someone. They could have spent their whole life
and the last
and the last that they've spent their whole lives trying to get there and do it. And maybe this means more to them than it does to us. I think it might be a little bit selfish to think that we need that tie-in to take away from their experience.
I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
Not to mention, they're worried about the experience without fans, but we've been proven time and time again that there are guys out there who can steal a show and make it very entertaining. So my perspective was, let's get 10 to 20 guys mic'd up throughout the day, guys who you know are going to be entertaining, and just get soundbite after soundbite.
So not Tiger.
I mean, yeah, maybe not. But I mean,
I'm a fan of him at Augusta, and I'd love to see him in contention on Sunday. But the match will be better without Tiger in it.
Yeah.
either he was muted or they muted his mic throughout three of them.
Phil was a good one. JT was a good one. I think even Rory, depending on who he's with. I'm sure Fowler would be a lot of fun to listen to talk out there. There are so many guys who have character enough to drive that kind of show. And I think if you're watching the Masters and you're likely a passionate golf fan, would you not want that opportunity? Like, let's get the one chance we have without fans to really, really focus in on the players who've made it there. You know,
I think that would be a lot of fun. Now, here's a question. Do you think there's any player on tour that would be mic'd up for the actual rounds?
Oh, during the event?
Yeah. I don't think they would at the Masters. At the par three, of course.
Yeah, par three, I don't think it'd be a problem. I don't know that too many guys would be all that excited. Yeah. And, you know, to Bryson's point, you have to protect the players to a certain level. And I've always said, if you don't want to hear them swear, then don't mic them up.
Right.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they'd want to do that during that event. I don't know if they want their experience kind of muddied with that.
Yeah, I don't think they would. But during the par three, I think that would be an absolute blast. And like I said, you could still have the game day tie-in if you wanted during the par three.
Yeah, I don't see why you couldn't, especially with all the blank air, the blank space that would be involved without, you know, fans or doing the weird stuff that they would normally do. I just don't see why it couldn't have happened. You know, that's my biggest issue.
I'm with you. I get the college football thing. I get we haven't done it. I get it's the South where it's religion. I understand all of that. To me, the Masters starts when the par three starts.
So Rob Miller time, pumpkin spice Masters logo. Does it offend you or does it make you happy?
At first I didn't get it. I was like, Rob seems like he's trying too hard. But I'm a Rob fan, and I would say 2 years ago it wouldn't have offended me. Now it kind of offends me.
Just give me my fall time Masters unscathed by outside sources.
Yeah, I don't need Starbucks involved in the Masters. I mean, that would take an incredible thing and make it really crappier.
Really crappier. Well, I think we've waited long enough. I mean, the opportunity to go and experience that for these guys, and not that I feel bad for Daniel Berger, but it'll be nice to get this out of the way and start looking towards 2021. There is one other thing I wanted to talk to you today about, Josh, and it has a lot to do with a video we actually just released on THPTV talking about forgiveness and wedges, something that I think a lot of people overlook or don't spend a lot of time considering. It's changing a little bit with set wedges. But we have an awesome product from Cleveland, the CBX2, which is a little bit more forgiving wedge. And we put it up against Zipcore, which is their brand new sort of bladed wedge or traditional wedge shape. And the results were, I'll let you speak to them because I was the one hitting, but I thought surprisingly positive for CBX2.
They were actually positive for both.
Yeah.
I mean, you hit both wedges really, really well.
Yeah.
But, you know, we wanted to do something, and we went into this test without having any clue what the results would be. We're not interested in the let's prove a theory kind of thing. And I you don't like to talk about your handicap, but you're a plus four handicap golfer. And we just naturally assumed that the Zipcore would be better. And you took five swings with each one, and we show the swings, we show the data, and it wasn't. And we saw that when you miss by a millimeter, and I mean a millimeter, we showed the picture on the forum of the pattern on the face, which is really small. things change depending on the golf club. And that was super intriguing.
What I think is so interesting about it is it's that perspective that we as golfers have, that you go as compact as possible without losing too much. And it's almost like once you hit a certain threshold, you have this like door wide open to go and start playing blades or start playing, you know, these workable irons, as they call them. And I think it leads into my final question of the day to you, which is, do you think people genuinely fear forgiveness?
Golfers as a whole, no. Golfers on the internet and on websites like mine and others, sure. And I don't think it's fear. Maybe fear is not the right word. I think they're skeptical about it. Kevin Na, who's a heck of a ball striker, said recently, why would anybody play blades on tour or elsewhere? He says he's not good enough to play them. That's pretty eye-opening. I mean, the guy is sponsored by an equipment company that makes muscle backs. There's no doubt about that. But I think there's a comfort level. You said they go to as compact as you can without diminishing returns, something along those lines. I'd go the other way, to go as large as you possibly can before it starts to bother you. Now, I will say that I think that the general basis of thick top line, thin top line, thick sole, and thin sole are overused a little bit, and because we're comforted into that. If you give somebody, if they played muscle backs for 10 years and then you give them an absolute hybrid iron, it's going to look super weird. If they played that hybrid iron for 10 days straight, it wouldn't look weird anymore. I mean, they do have the ability to hit a driver. They do have the ability to hit fairway woods. Obviously, they can look down on something different. So I think there's a little bit of that. I think that there is a skepticism of what works and what doesn't. And a lot of that has to do with not truly understanding what club design does. And the sole of the club is the perfect example of that, along with leading edge. There's a misnomer that I can't use a thick sole, it's going to bounce too much, things like that. That's just not the case, because that's not really what, it's not from the size of the sole that makes that happen. A lot of times it's from the way this, I'm doing it again, because it's the way the sole is shaped, leading and trailing edges, the camber and things like that. So there's more to it than meets the eye. But if you go back even a decade, okay, and follow me here, I'm sure these people are bored already, but wedges started coming in every loft by some brands. You could get anything you wanted. And that was a great thing. Versatility, choices are good. Versatility is good. And then it was, well, we can change that. Let's make different grinds. And now we have more grinds available. And now we're changing that. Now there's more grinds available plus perimeter weighting in wedges. Now we're changing that even further. Now there's more grinds, perimeter weighting, and even oversized wedges, specialty wedges designed to do a certain thing. So I think without the right messaging and education, it's hard to understand what it is, because the general theory still goes back to a decade ago of, this club is so short, I'm not going to miss with it that much. I don't need the perimeter weighting in a scoring clubs. I need precision. And the idea was that when you get to something bigger, because this is what happened 20 years ago, when you get to a club that's bigger, precision goes away. See the original Ping I2s, which were great irons, but you lost some precision, excuse me, with that. That's not necessarily the case, as we showed in that video, and I'm going off on 900 tangents here. When you get to something larger, you don't necessarily lose precision anymore. In fact, you could enhance it. And we took, again, a plus four handicap and kind of showed that it could actually help. So there's a lot to think about, and I don't love the idea of just choosing wedges based on loft anymore. I think there's more to it than that. I'm a big proponent in fitting, as you know, whether it's at a club champion, whether it's a outdoor demo day, whatever it is, even basic fitting is better than no fitting. So I am one of those people who says when you get into the wedge shafts, assuming you're not playing one length, there's less variable in shafts because of how short they are. Minus people like yourself and a couple others that swing very fast into the ball. But for most people, there's not going to be a huge amount of variable there. Again, in my opinion, but I do think that there's the fitting is so important. And the people who say you can't get fit for wedges indoors, I disagree with that. I think you can. It's how you deliver the ball. And more people, because of how far irons are going now, loft and otherwise, more people are taking full swings with their wedges too. So that's another element of, hey, maybe I would like some perimeter weighting. Maybe I would like a lower third of the club, lower quarter of the club to have a little more meat there. So when I miss laterally heel and toe, there's some impact there that's not just going to turn the club. There's higher MOI. The club's not going to shift in my hand. The spin's not going to change dramatically. And all those things come into play.
So I think when it comes to the talk about precision, I would absolutely accept the argument that if you had to work a ball and you had to do it in a certain way, not consistently, but the best potential to do that would be with a bladed iron. Yeah. Now, what I think that throws away is the other argument. And I think what represents in the video we did was that more often than not, the goal is not to work a ball left or right, up or down. The goal is to hit a shot at a green or at a target and hope the absolute best and pursue the least amount of dispersion from that center line. And I think that's what CBX2 did. It's not that I hit Zipcore poorly. I actually hit it quite well.
You actually hit it really well.
But from a precision perspective, five balls versus five balls, the deviation was half with CBX2. And by that, it's like 2.5 feet. So it's not anything significant. It was 2 to 4.5, I think, was the deviation. So it's nothing crazy, but I think it leads to that other argument is straight line distance should be, in my belief, the most important thing that we seek to pursue. And I'm in your camp. I believe play the most forgiving iron you possibly can without diminishing any experience for yourself. That's something I've applied for a long time. That's something I encourage my guys locally here to apply. I mean, hell, I got buddies in, two different buddies who I play regularly with are in hollow body irons. And one of them refuses to say he can play anything other than a blade, but for his perspective, and we're talking about HMB here from Mizuno, it's kind of bladey to him. So he doesn't see that huge difference. He's mentally beat himself in this case to gain forgiveness, which is pretty funny. But yeah, that was a pretty solid tangent, and it certainly does a nice job of wrapping up the show. Do you have any other thoughts you want to give on that or anything else you want to say?
Oh man, I could go hours on this topic.
Yeah. We turn it into a part two. Let's go.
Yeah. I'll just say this when it comes to the forgiveness angle. I think people should test things for themselves. And I also think there's no bad decision when it comes to wedges. If you are a guy who full swings and from up to 50 yards, you like to take a full swing, the perimeter weighting on a wedge is going to help you. A larger sole is most likely going to help you, depending on how you deliver the ball, deliver the club to the ball. But it doesn't have to be. You can have multiple types of wedges. If you look at my bag, which is over there, I have two perimeter weighted wedges, and then I have a high lofted 62 degree wedge that I use that's for extreme versatility. Now, most people wouldn't want to go that high in loft, but I'm pretty steep and it works for me. So I think that there's a ways to do this, but think about what you do with the club and what you do with the ball at the course you play the most at to determine what is best for you.
That was actually a conversation we had during the discussion today on that video. Is we were talking about a 56 degree. And I think what people forget is when you talk about a wedge, it doesn't have to be all of your wedges, especially when it comes from the same company. You could easily get away with playing so my setup's 50, 54, 58. I'm not good enough to play a 62 wedge.
Yeah.
He says, yeah. So I'm looking, okay, I straight full swing my 50 and my 54. Why wouldn't I go to a CBX2 there? The one that I want maximum versatility with is my 58. So yeah, maybe at that point I say, okay, bladed wedge, best potential. I think people are afraid of the idea of, and it's very interesting to me. Everyone is so used to playing the same wedge all the way through, whether it's 52, 56, 60, whether it's 50, 54, 58, there's this perception that it all has to be the exact same wedge. And considering we're transitioning at pitching wedge to from an iron pitching wedge to a more of a bladed wedge shape, why not transition again? You know, close
it should really be thought of how distance is. Mm-hmm. So you should look at it, how far do you hit to where you're taking a full swing versus the versatility? And there's a big fear factor in thick rough and bunkers where people are, I can't hit that out of the bunker. I need to open it up for maximum ability. So have one wedge that you feel more comfortable doing that with. I personally don't have a problem hitting a 54 degree or a 56 degree CBX or Mac Daddy CB wedge out of a bunker. In fact, it works really, really well. The wider sole and the leading edge is designed kind of perfect for that. But I think there's some misnomers there, but there's a lot of that in golf. And I always say, play what you want.
Play what you want. Have fun. Watch the video. Get that perspective for yourself, as always. I think that's the best way about it. And I hope folks enjoy the kind of information we provide on THP TV, where we're not trying to tell you what to do. We're just trying to show you the difference and hope that you either go and hit them yourself or help to get a better understanding of what's going on there.
And I'm going to invite myself back on the show in the future to tell you about a swing evolution that I am going through right now and going to be doing in 2021 that is pretty nuts.
Okay.
So I'm not going to get into that now. We're not going to have a 2-hour podcast.
That's fine. 10 years ago, you defined your swing as a folded lawn chair.
That's correct. But is a folding lawn chair that worked.
Is it going to transition into something more elegant?
I can't promise that. But I can tell you that at that time, I was a 2.6 handicap. And I've gotten a lot older and a lot worse. And I need to fix that. So I'm going on this evolution and I want to take people on this wonderful journey with me.
Awesome.
I can't even say it with a straight face, yeah. But it's true.
Well, let's have you on again. Obviously, you'll be a regular here on Off Course, and I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Josh, thanks again for joining today. And for those of you out there who can still golf and enjoy it, it's raining here in Ohio. Probably not playing this weekend, but if you do, play well.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.